how did this book happen? How did you decide to write it?
Well, things just kind of fell together. Erna lives three houses, or she lives in an apartment building that's three houses from my home. I went to high school with her and was a high school friend of her youngest daughter, Inara, and had lost kind of touch with her. She had moved away and was having health problems, but I became adult friends with her third daughter, Zyga. And the girls had always been talking to their mother, trying to get her to tell the story. Except for Estrida, she was around 9 or 10 when they ended up coming to the United States. And she had some memory, but the little ones didn't really have much memory. And they wanted to know. And Erna didn't want to talk about it. And it was just something she just wouldn't talk about. And she wouldn't talk about the good times in Latvia either, because it made her very sad of what she'd lost. Finally, at age 95, they persuaded her. And Zyga remembered that I was an English major. Zyga had always said, Janice, you need to write. And I said, oh, Zyga, I have nothing to write about. And so she provided something. And so we came to the conclusion that the best way to handle it would be for Erna to tape her story. And then I would transcribe the tapes and then put them in a memoir, a biography. She did the taping at her daughter Estrida's, and when she'd finish a tape, they'd send it to me, and I'd work on that tape, and then the next one would come. And the beauty of it was that Erna doesn't ramble. She was very organized in her thought. She was very, you know, she had it in her mind, the way the story unfolded, starting with her childhood and moving through her life until she came to America. So that's where it went. And then we spent about a year getting it in that form. And then Estrida took the book and did the first publishing for the family. And then we published for everyone after that.
Well, my next question is to Erna. What was it like digging back into memories? As Janice mentioned, some of it was kind of difficult.
Well, it was not easy. That was very hard. Most memories I revive was during the night. That means I lost a lot of sleep.
That's usually the way it happens, I think. At night is when our memories surface.
I don't know. When they finally, the girls didn't leave me alone, I said, okay. So I just started from a start to the end, just went on step by step as it was. There is nothing, you know, made up or flowery or anything like that to make a story, you know. I just did it what it was, fact, and that's all.
So tell us a little bit, for those who haven't read the book, describe your family. Give us a background of your childhood, something about your father's business. He was a very successful businessman.
Well, my father, as a young man, he left Latvia, and he went about, I guess he was about 18 years old, so get education in masonry and construction to Estonia. And that's where I born, in Estonia.
Oh, okay.
We lived there about 3-4 years, I guess. And then when he finished school, and also the work what he did have, he was building a wall against the Baltic Sea in Estonia. And when he finished that, he returned to Latvia. And I was about 4 years old when we returned to Latvia.
And then after you describe your childhood and as you get older, you work in your father's business. So as I was reading your story, it was interesting to me that in some ways in your generation, there was a lot of chauvinism against women, that, you know, they're second class to men. On the other hand, your father entrusted you with business.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I did have to go. I was going to take up a pianist in life, in music. He forced me to go in a business because my brother was going to take over, and I will, you know, we'll all business people. I was 10 years old when I did have to go to office just to spend the time. You know, we have these little... I don't know how you call these tablets where you count. You know, we didn't have editing machines then. Mm-hmm. But you know, flip these little balls around and learn how to add and how to destruct, you know, and to work, you know. I was about 10, 11 years old.
That's remarkable.
In Latvia, when Latvia started develop, you know, that was really the biggest time for construction. They built schools and hospitals, and I don't know, my dad did have always at least in the summer about 4 buildings or 5 buildings were going up.
So you experienced Latvia both when it was thriving and then the destruction,
yeah,
when the Soviet army and the German army, back and forth.
Yeah, back and forth.
So tell us a little bit. Go ahead.
I went through all that because, till 1940, when I did got married and worked in my father's business, I did finish my business academy. But I did have to go to, you know, to get education first. And then I worked in my dad's business, took over bookkeeping and all handling, you know, business. And I don't know, just fall in, you know, naturally, you know, it was something that you did have to do. And we worked till 1940. When my younger daughter was born, Russians came in. It was very strange. I was going to take go university and study economy, and I was going to sign up like you go in and out, you know, on your own time. And I was coming out from university steps in Riga, and I stood there and I see the tanks, you know, running, you know, in front of me, real long line tanks. And I said, what is going on? So, and I did have to go to railroad station. I go real fast, you know, I go down there. It's all full with Russian soldiers. So, but I did train, went home. I went home and I said, Mom, what's happening? Mom said, well, we don't have Latvia anymore. Russia invaded us. And that's how it started. And then, my mom was sent to Siberia. My dad was hiding in a forest till the Germans came back for a short time. And then when Germans came back, then didn't have no other choice to get killed or my dad would be killed. You know, I don't know how much money was awarded if they found him when he was hiding in a forest. But when my dad said, we will just go and leave country and that's all, and get all what you can get with you. And we just packed everything, you know, for children to food and so they can. I did have one about 16 months old and one 4 years old, I think, who was about 40 years old. She traveled with me like a little soldier, you know, all these years through the war. And we were traveled. We left. We just got in time when the Riga bridge was bombed. If we would have about half hour later, we would never be able to leave Latvia because the bridge was Riga was bombed and destroyed. So, but we got over and we went through the Kurzem and all that area down to the Liepāja. And believe it or not, we got on the last ship. And there were 2 ships landed each besides, you know. And we were lucky ones. The other ship that was besides, I don't know how many feet between, got bombed. The Russians bombed that night, real heavy, Liepāja, real heavy. So we finally got the ship and finally got to Liepāja, and then from there, journey goes.
You know, your family story matches the family stories that I grew up listening to from my parents and grandparents. Very similar. And there was this huge attempt by the Soviets to destroy the intelligentsia. Anybody who had an education, anybody who owned a business like your father, anybody who was a thinker, a doer, they were they were the first on the list to be either deported to Siberia or destroyed.
Well, my father escaped because a workman worked for my dad for many years. In fact, he did have, I don't know, seven children or something like that. And my dad helped, bought them shoes and supported them, you know, at Christmas time and birthdays and things like that. He was a very generous man. He did a lot for the town. And it happened that night, you know, when they was at the deportation, you know, sign for my dad, he came and knocked at the window outside and said, leave house right away. And that's when my dad got out, you know, and ran out and formed. He have a bicycle. And he went down there and he took my dad out to my aunt's place in Baltzer. That's by Riga, you know, resort. And he stayed there overnight and decided what to do. And then that, from there on, he was hiding in the woods all the time, you know, from one place to other place till the Germans came in.
Yes, I can identify with that story as well. And I imagine it may have been the same for your family. My parents tell me that when they left on those boats, that they all thought they were going to return when the war was over.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But it didn't turn out that way.
No, I thought I will return when war will end. And we will return back to Latvia. And guess what? Czechoslovakia, we were, you know, that time, well, Germany took over Czechoslovakia, and we thought we are safe, you know. And in the evening, you know, we see the tanks rolling in after war, and they are Russians. Russians took over that area. So we refugees, all what we were down there in Czechoslovakia, we went under Russia again. So we didn't have what choice. Finally, guy who know how to fix cars in Germans left some car on the side and he fixed, and his wife came over in the midnight. He said, did you want escape and get out from here and try, you know, we still can get out to the American zone or, you know, German zone or whatever. And what choice we did have, I said. So I bundled up my kids, got diapers, a baby buggy, and put the diapers in and food and sing some memorable things, you know, what I wanted to save, and put under that buggy and child to sleep. And we left, you know, town at 1 o'clock, and we did reach American zone about 7 o'clock in the morning. And an American soldier come out and wanted to know why we are coming here. And I did have to do a lot of explanation that we are running away from Russians. And he said, Russians are just as good people as we are. I said, yeah, I hope so.
Some education there.
yeah, you don't know, but I'm not going to argue with you. You think they are good people, that's fine to me. So that's how it started. And in a book, you can see where I go from one town to other.
My family members were in one of the displaced persons, the DP camps they were in was Esslingen. And I, as I read the book, I saw that you were there too.
Yeah, Esslingen. I was in Esslingen.
So who knows? You might have crossed paths with my family.
There was only one huge big building, and that building is still today. My daughter visited Germany, and she went down old memory line, you know, where to went to church and where what did things when we lived in Esslingen. And there is everything that some other refugees are coming in from other countries. They are still refugee camp in Esslingen.
So I'm wondering, too, if you can talk about how war is a different experience for men than it is for women and children.
Well, women get busy with children, and they have to supply food, and they have to cook, and they have to clean. Men don't have nothing to do. that's what happened. That's why so many families break up and bad things happen, because men don't have nothing to do. They just play cards, smoke, and, you know, just go from one house to other house, drink beer and whatever, whiskey, whatever. See, that is just war destroyed a man.
And you suffered from that as well. Your marriage broke up.
Oh yeah. That's what happened. That was the reason. Men did have no meaning, you know, responsibility or anything, and they care less for the children.
And then you came to the U.S. I mean, time passes and people get sponsored, and you came to the U.S. Tell us a little bit about how you came through Ellis Island and how you found your way to Adrian, Michigan.
I did not was sponsored. My husband did have an uncle in Detroit. He worked for Ford Motor Company, and he sponsored, paid our way. I did not got, nobody's help, you know, from government or anybody. That was all private. When I came, I came to Detroit because he lived in Detroit, and I did not like in Detroit because that was busy city. And I said, oh no, I don't want to live here. So he said, okay, I have a friend, farmers. He was Quaker. Wilson St. Clinton, and I will ask him if it would take you in for summer till you decide what you really want to do. So that's what happened. We came out from Detroit to Clinton, Michigan, and that was a big farm, and children enjoy, you know, a lot of freedom and a lot of fun. They worked things, you know, in the yard. But then that was not what was my goal. So I said, I have to get something else. So I got through the church, Friends Church, I got to know some people. And they advised me to who to talk and to find out with my education if I can get a job. I cleaned about 3-4 houses before I got a job in Tecumseh Products Company. It did happen. The owner was from Denmark, and he hear about me, and he wanted to talk to me. And so they called me to come see Products office, and I went down there, and I took my diploma with me, and what else I was able to prove, that, you know, what education I have, what I can do. And I told them that I worked in my father's business and so on. So the next day, I got a new bag to report again in the office, and I went back. And they said, you are hired. So that was 19.
And that's where you met your second husband in this job.
He was engineer there.
And you were raising 4 young girls at this point.
Yeah.
Now, it struck me, especially the story of Astrid, and I kept thinking, you know, the effect on children of losing their homes and seeing war and bombs and all of that trauma around them. It seemed like your eldest daughter especially was an old soul very quickly. She
did
up.
Have a very hard time. Believe me, I think she, I don't know how old was she, that we lived in Adrian, Michigan, and when the planes would fly over, she ran under the bed. She was at least 12, 13 years old.
That's terrifying.
And I said, finally, I said, you have to quit doing that. But just automatically, that, you know, that she have to run.
Of course, yeah.
You know.
I can't blame her.
Yeah. Children adjusted very well.
Yeah, they're resilient. That's true.
Oh, yeah. They adjusted very well when they came to the schools. There were some, you know, who wasn't happy because they speak German when we came to here to America. And, of course, Latvian. But school, they were all in German.
And then there are some remarkable stories of you returned to Latvia much later in life.
Oh,
and
yeah.
you had reunions with family members,
with
your mother,
mom.
Too. Yeah. So tell us a little more about that.
Well, that's quite a change, you know, when you have a very good-looking mother, you know. She was very, you know, dressed, you know, a very, very nice lady. And when I landed in Riga, you know, and gate when I go out, I look, you know, for my mother or brother. You know, they were on tour I'm looking for. And there is old lady with a cane, you know, standing by the gate.
So you didn't recognize her at first?
Even would not know that is my mother, you know, how Siberia changed her.
Did she recognize you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We did have a good time. I went about quite a few times back in the Russian time. To see my mother. There was 1 year at the end when they didn't give me visa because they started to think that I am some kind of spy, that I make too many trips, you know.
There was a lot of paranoia. Yeah, I went back to the Soviet Union, too, to visit.
Yeah, I made one trip, you know, every year, you know, to see my mom. Mm-hmm. But the last year, just before she died, They gave me visa when she passed away, so I was not able to see her, you know, in the last hours.
So if we can get the phone here back to Janice, I've got a couple of questions for her. Thank you so much, Erna.
That was a hard time. I told my daughters, I don't want to go back. I won't go forward, but I did have to do it to survive because they were after me. Well, here is Janice.
Hello.
Okay, Janice. So talk to me about what was it like writing this book? I mean, I imagine it's very different from the life experience that you and your family have. What kind of discoveries and surprises did you learn about your neighbor?
Well, to know that I grew up and I had sleepovers with Inara, and, you know, I had no concept of what she had been through. It was mind-blowing, to say the least, that here my friend, my high school friend and junior high friend had, what she had been through as a little girl and what her sisters had been through. And I remember she showed me a picture on her wall, and one time when we were having a sleepover and I was at her house, and she said, it was the little, she and her sisters in their Latvian outfits before they came, they had the picture taken, and she said, "I'm Latvian." And I thought, oh, well, that's nice. You know, I'm from Tipton.
Had you heard of Latvia before? Or
was it
completely new territory for you?
Absolutely. That was the first time. And that I had actually even, you know, because I think in our education, we didn't learn about what happened with Russian occupation, and because they were our ally. So We didn't know about those things. You know, we knew Germany was bad, but and then later in the Cold War, then Russia became, you know, we started learning a little bit more about Russia. But so that was all surprising. Kind of having to understand what an occupation means. We hear it on the news, but I think it just, you know, we get kind of immune.
Right, until it happens to somebody that you know.
Right, and to understand what an occupation does to people. You know, we don't understand that in the United States at all. Possibly back in the Civil War, they might, you know, there was, you know, the maybe when the North occupied the South or whatever, but nothing compared to what the war did. And then at the end of the war, that they could just keep those independent countries, you know, and not that they couldn't have their countries back. And that's just, and then the whole refugee situation, and then learning about refugees and what Erna and her children did to survive, what she did to keep her babies alive, and then to see refugees, you know, Syrian refugees on boats.
You know, I was going to ask you about that, Janice. Having written this book and heard Erna's story, how does that change your view on how do you look at refugees today? Because it's obviously a crisis again today.
I know. It's just, it breaks my heart. I have, you know, the humanity, it's just mind-boggling. And I know the one thing that Erna really, the other thing that she really made me think about was the people that were so brave during the war, and hopefully there's humanitarians out there now that are, but the Red Cross and the Salvation Army, and how they were just in the middle of it and trying to keep people safe, regardless of who's, what side they were on or, you know, what was happening. They were on those trains when the refugees would come through looking for children if they needed help or food. And a lot of people that read the book said the same thing. Wow. You know, and the nuns, the sisters that came in and were, you know, trying to help. And yeah, it just, the whole refugee situation is just heartbreaking and mind-boggling. It's just,
as you were researching this book, did you travel overseas to the Baltic states at all?
No, I haven't. I've been to Europe, but I'd love to, yes.
You've written about these places now. I would imagine it'd be interesting for you to see them.
Yes, Erna said, Estrida has to take you.
A good idea.
Yeah, that would be wonderful because I just, you know, in the first part of her story, it just pictures, you know, this almost fairyland place. It just sounded so beautiful, and to have that all disrupted.
You'll have to write a follow-up book and pictures of the places as they look today. I think
yes.
You'd be stunned with the differences.
Exactly. Estrida has documented it. She's taken a lot, back and taken a lot of pictures and kind of, you know.
So have you, because of this book and writing it, have you had some really interesting conversations with the four daughters?
Yes, I have. Well, Inara died in 2006. And but Estrida and I have talked a lot, and Zyga, and to some extent Rudy. But I think it was a very healing thing for the daughters, and I think it it was hard for Erna, but I think it was also good for her to tell this story.
So where is the book available? Where can people get this?
It is on Amazon. And also, you know, you can get it through Barnes & Noble and any other book sources like that. It's available.
Thank you to both of you so much for taking time to talk with me today.